Reacher said. We've never met. Sands hit the door button, climbed out, and beckoned Tomasino to follow her. He got halfway out of his seat, then sank back down.
There's one other thing, he said. Something I want you to know. The food I eat at Fat Freddy's, I always pay for it. Apart from that first time when they caught me by surprise. I do what I do for my wife. To keep her safe. Not to get something for nothing, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe they robbed my truck. Maybe they don't. But I am not one of them.
Chapter 20. So, it wasn't laziness. It was greed. Only not on Tomasino's part. He was just a pawn. He could have made a stand, Reacher supposed, in which case the servers would already be back in their hands. But he couldn't blame the guy for looking the other way while his work truck got looted. Not with his wife's life on the line. And not over a bunch of junk that people had already thrown away. Reacher would have been happier if they were driving away with the servers stacked safely in the back of the minivan. But having another breadcrumb to follow was better than nothing. The GPS predicted a 22-minute drive to Fat Freddy's, but that turned into 46 minutes because Reacher asked Sands to make a detour via the truck stop. He wanted to get his hands on two more things, a bolt cutter, the biggest they had, and a padlock, the strongest he could find. Sands took the opportunity to top off the gas while Reacher was inside, and she was waiting when he returned, with the engine running and the next leg of the route highlighted on the screen. She drove faster than before, buoyed up with the prospect of retrieving the servers, Reacher figured. She pushed the minivan hard, swaying and drifting through the curves until a robotic voice from the dashboard announced that their destination was on their left. They were still north of town. A few houses were dotted around amongst the fields and the trees, but the concentrated development was still at least a mile away. There was a pre-war flatbed parked on either side of the driveway, like a rusty automotive equivalent of the statues Reacher had seen at the entrance to Grand Estates. The diner itself was set back from the road. It was a wide rectangular building made to look like it was constructed from logs. It had a green metal roof and a full-width porch and a neon sign mounted in the center of the front wall. It spelled out Fat Freddy's in flashing red letters, and below the script, an animated cartoon cowboy repeatedly lifted a colossal cheeseburger from his plate to his mouth. The parking lot was out front. It was packed. The dinner rush was still in full swing. Sands threaded her way around the cars and trucks that had been left at the ends of rows and half up on the curbs and looped around to the back of the building. There was another line of spaces marked staff only. Again, all taken. Beyond them was the outbuilding, just where Tomasino had said it would be. It was low and square, built of pale brick, with a flat roof and a fenced-off area attached at the front to contain the garbage cans. Sands pulled up at the side, next to its door. Reacher climbed out. He was holding the bolt cutter low down, tight against his leg. He checked that no one was watching, raised the tool, closed its jaws over the top of the padlock, and squeezed. Hard. The metal loop severed. He swung the body of the lock aside, pulled it clear, and stowed its remains in his pocket. Sands jumped down and joined him. Rutherford scurried around from the far side of the van. Ready? Reacher said. Sands and Rutherford looked at each other and nodded. Reacher pulled the door. Its hinges squealed. Daylight flooded in almost to the far wall. Inside, the floor was covered with heaps of equipment, a similar mix to the junk at the recycling plant. Only here, it was neatly sorted into categories. Computers in one area, monitors next to them, then keyboards, and mice, and printers, and TVs, and DVD players. Presumably, everything was serviceable, although Reacher didn't know how to tell for sure. Everything was certainly ordered and organized, and there was only one thing that wasn't electronic. A cabinet. It was 6 feet tall, standing on its own at the back of the space, half hidden in the shadows. Its solid right side was facing them, and the remains of its glass door was hanging open.
There it is.
Rutherford pushed past Reacher and rushed forward, pulling out his phone as he went. He switched on its flashlight, dodged around to the front of the cabinet, looked inside, then slumped sideways, ending up with his right shoulder propped against the wall. "What's wrong?" Sands said. Rutherford couldn't speak. He just gestured vaguely with his left hand. Sands crossed the room, looked into the cabinet, and turned back to Reacher. He knew what she was going to say before she opened her mouth. "It's empty. They're gone." Reacher had a vision of the servers receding even farther into the distance, and the new guy from Moscow heading in the opposite direction, on a plane, growing ever closer. "Any chance they're in one of these piles?" Reacher said. Rutherford struggled back upright and shook his head. "No. There's only one lot of computers, and they're all desktops. The servers aren't here. We're too late." "That's the wrong way to look at it," Reacher said. "We're not too late. We're a step closer. We know for sure they were here, which means we're on the right track."
"That's true," Sands said.
She took Rutherford's arm and led him to the door.
"Come on, we're not giving up."
"What can we do?" Rutherford said. "It's a dead end."
"No, it isn't," Sands said. "The servers were here. Someone knows what happened to them."
"I guess," Rutherford said. "But who?" "We already know who," Sands said. "Bill Budnick, the man who threatened Thomasina, who owns this place. We'll talk to him. Make him tell us who he sold them to."
"Think he's still here?"
Rutherford said. "What if he doesn't work evenings?"
"We'll go inside," Sands said. "It should be easy to see if he's around. And if he's not, someone will know how to contact him."
"No need to go looking for him," Reacher said. "Give it 5 minutes, maybe less. He'll come to us." Reacher leaned into the van and slid the bolt cutter under his seat, then turned and shoved the outbuilding door closed.
"Right," Sands said. "The half-hour thing."
"I don't follow," Rutherford said. "Thomasino said he could show up here any time the place is open." Reacher slid the new lock into place and clicked it shut. No need to call ahead. He just had to stay for half an hour.
"Meaning that whoever searches his truck is always here," Sands said.
"He needs time to look through all the stuff, figure out what's valuable, move it to the outbuilding, and get clear before Thomasino comes back out. 30 minutes is already tight. Anything else? Like relying on another person to notice Thomasino had showed up, taking their call, driving here from wherever he's based. That would add too much overhead."
"Maybe," Rutherford said. "But it doesn't follow that Budnick does that himself."
"True." Reacher leaned against the wall. "But professional criminals generally want two things. As much reward as possible, and as little risk as possible. If Budnick doesn't deal with the trucks himself, he has to bring in someone else to do it. At least one person, maybe two, to cover all the week's shifts. These people would need to be paid, which dilutes the profit. They might drop a dime on him. And they would have to keep sneaking away from the kitchen, or the dishwasher, or whatever their cover job is, which would be suspicious, which would increase the risk." He pointed to a fire door at the back of the main building. "A dime gets a dollar that the next guy who comes out of there is Budnick. Meantime, Rusty, you better get back in the van. Keep your head down. You're local. You've been in the paper. He might recognize you." The fire door opened after 3 minutes, and a man stepped out. He was dressed in a pale gray suit with a white shirt and a flowery tie. His hair was neatly parted, and he was enormous. 6'2", and at least 400 pounds. The perils of being surrounded by free food all day, every day, Reacher thought. The guy stood still for a moment, head tipped slightly to one side, assessing the situation. The guy came to a conclusion and started toward the outbuilding. He was light on his feet. He moved fast. Reacher updated his appraisal. The guy was not a slob, after all. Maybe a former wrestler. Or a lineman. Not that his background was going to make any difference. Not unless he had a heart attack before giving Reacher what he wanted. "I'm sorry, folks," the guy said. "You can't park there. I'm going to have to ask you to move." "That's not right, is it, Mr. Budnick?" Reacher said. "We can park here. Clearly. Because we have. And you don't have to ask us to move. You want to." "Who the hell are you?" Budnick said. "And how do you know my name?"
"I know a lot about you," Reacher said.
I know you own this restaurant, and I know that owning a restaurant isn't enough for you, because you do a little business on the side. So I'm here to make you an offer, something very simple. We both get what we want. We go our separate ways. Sound good? Firstly, I have no idea what you're talking about. I run my diner. That's it. Period. Full stop. I have nothing else going on the side. And secondly, even if I did, what have you got that I could possibly want? Nothing. I'm not selling. I'm buying. Or more accurately, bartering, as no money is going to change hands. You're going to give me something, and I'm going to do something for you in return. You're very sure of yourself. Reacher said nothing. All right, Budnick said. I'll bite. What do you want? A piece of information. Such as? Some electronic equipment was brought here. Now it's gone. The problem is, it belongs to us, and we want it back. So you're going to tell me who you sold it to. Budnick didn't reply. And in return, I won't break your legs, Reacher said. Screw you. Budnick took a step back, pulled a phone out of his jacket pocket, and started poking at its screen. Reacher took it from him and tossed it to Sands. You obviously weren't dialing 911, since we're talking about stolen goods, Reacher said. Which means you were calling whoever you pay for protection. To do what? Send over 3 or 4 guys? Now, normally, I'd be in favor of that. I've spent a lot of today sitting on my ass, waiting and talking. A little light exercise would be welcome. But unfortunately, I'm short of time, which means that either you tell me what I want to know, or I take my frustration out on you. Oh, yeah? Budnick raised his chin. Come on, then. Try it. See how it works out for you. A wrestler, Reacher thought. Or a lineman. Which meant he'd probably try some kind of grappling maneuver. Or he'd charge, hoping to knock Reacher down. He'd have to do something like that. There was very little chance of him landing a punch. Or a kick. Reacher was confident about that. Budnick was 3 inches shorter to start with. And Reacher had abnormally long arms. The simplest thing would be to wait for Budnick to make his move, then punch him in the face the moment he was in range. But not too hard. Reacher didn't want to knock him out. Not until he'd given up a name. Budnick shuffled to the side, moving clockwise, closer to the outbuilding, trying to get a straight shot toward the parking lot, meaning he was going to charge, not grapple. He was a big guy. Hauling a body that size around would take a lot of energy. Reacher changed his plan. He had space to his left and right. He could dodge out of Budnick's way, run the guy around, wear him out. Let him defeat himself. Budnick moved another 6 inches, braced himself for launch. Then Sands stepped up. She drove the side of her foot hard into his knee, and he went down sideways like a felled tree, squealing, then rolled onto his back and clutched his injured leg. What? Sands turned to Reacher. Why should I let you boys have all the fun? Budnick scrabbled into a sitting position, his hurt leg still bent. That kick? Sands stepped in front of him. Half power. The next kick? Full power. And forget your legs. I'm going right for your balls. And I never miss. Budnick whimpered and tried to scramble away backward. Unless you give us the name, Sands said. Who you sold the electronics to. Right now. I can't, Budnick said. I didn't sell it. Go ahead, Reacher said. Kick him. No, Budnick said. Please, you don't understand. I don't sell the stuff. It's not my operation. I just rent out the space where it gets stored. Who do you rent it to? Reacher said. The guy I pay for protection. Okay, what's his name? Where do we find him? No. Please, I can't. Look, he doesn't even pay me. He regards it as a favor, a courtesy. Reacher and Sands looked at each other. It's true. Budnick held up his hands. I swear. Look, this is the hospitality business. I knew protection would be a thing. I even put it in the budget. Under a fake heading, obviously. I had cash set aside, ready to go. The guy showed up the night I reopened. Like clockwork. Told me how much I had to pay. It was a lot, but what could I do? I agreed. Then he told me about this other thing, with the electronics, a sideline of his. It had been going on for years, apparently. The guy I bought the place from must have forgotten to mention it. The asshole. Anyway, the protection guy said he was happy with the arrangement. He suggested I might like to keep it going, for the sake of my health. What was I going to say? I'm not stupid. Maybe you are stupid, Reacher said. Maybe you're not. But here's the thing. Who told you what and when? What you get paid for and what you give away? I don't care. I only want to hear two things from you. The name of this guy and where we can find him. I can't tell you. He'll kill me. And if you don't tell me, my friend is going to kick a field goal with your testicles. I can't imagine that would feel good. So you're going to have to do all kinds of thinking about your priorities, about current certainties versus future possibilities. And you're going to have to do it fast because I'm running out of patience. Budnick was silent for a minute. Then he struggled to his feet. You mentioned priorities. Well, what are yours? Getting your stuff back? Or getting the guy who's got it? Because the way I see it, for your stuff to end up here, it must have gotten thrown in the trash at some point. Maybe that was a mistake. Maybe someone did it to mess with you. But however it got there, it wasn't my guy's fault. So, what if I could help you get your stuff back, but without involving him? Reacher took a moment to think. A protection racket suggested organized crime. Organized crime suggested prostitution, drugs, gambling, loan sharking. All things he had no time for. All things in an ideal world he would tear down. But he wasn't living in an ideal world. And he wasn't dealing in the hypothetical. He had more tangible concerns. The identity of the spy who was trying to steal a copy of the Sentinel for one thing, and Rutherford's safety for another. Priorities indeed. All right, Reacher said. Suppose I forget about your guy. Suppose I only care about getting my stuff back. How could that happen? I know where he keeps it, Budnick said. The good stuff. I'm assuming your stuff is good. Reacher nodded. One of his guys let it slip once, where he was taking it. He didn't realize what he was saying. He was just running his mouth. And it was months ago. He wouldn't remember anyway. So you could go there, make it look like a random robbery, and no one could ever tie it back to me. Everyone could walk away happy, except for the protection guy. But hey, screw him. Reacher looked at Sands. She nodded. Okay, Reacher said. Where is the place? It's called Norm's Self-Storage. He has Unit E4. You can Google the address. I can tell you the code for the gate. I know it because I started renting a unit for myself during the renovations. It's the unit number, mine is A6, and the last 7 digits of my cell. He rattled off a string of numbers. Good, Reacher said. But, you know, before we go racing across town, maybe we should make absolutely certain our stuff isn't here. The door is padlocked, and it was hard to get a good look through the crack. Can you open it for us? You didn't check inside? How could we? Budnick shrugged, then took a Titan's fob out of his pocket. It had a single key attached. He handed it to Reacher. Makes sense, I guess. Here, you open it. Reacher stepped into the space between the building and the minivan. He switched keys while his back was turned, worked the new padlock, and pulled open the door. Why didn't we think of this before? Reacher pretended to hit himself in the forehead with his palm. It was inside all along. Budnick, come here. I need your help moving it. Budnick limped forward. Which thing's yours? It's all the way at the back, Reacher said. See that tall cabinet with a broken door? That's it. No way. Budnick shook his head. I remember dragging that thing in. It weighs a damn ton. Look, take it if you want, but you're on your own. Okay, Reacher said. Your choice. He braced one foot against the side of the minivan and slammed into Budnick's back, hard, right between the shoulder blades. Budnick staggered through the doorway. His arms flapped like the wings of a giant flightless bird. He stumbled forward, steered around one pile of equipment, two. Then he stepped in the heap of computer mice. His feet got tangled in the wires and he pitched forward, landing next to the widescreen TVs. Reacher tossed the Titan's keyring in after him. "Don't worry. Someone will come by and let you out. Unless you were lying about the storage unit, or it's a trap. In which case it won't be the protection guy who's screwed. It'll be you." Sans gestured to Reacher to hold his position, then darted around to the other side of the minivan. She returned a moment later with two bottles of water from the pack he had bought earlier, set them down just over the threshold, waited for him to close the door and work the lock. Then she took hold of his arm. "You are going to come back and let Budnick out, right? If we need to have another conversation," Reacher said. "And if you don't need to? If we get the servers? You can't just leave him locked in there." "I won't leave him. Not for long. I'll call Officer Rule, tell her where to find him. Let her put another feather in her cap." "Isn't that a bit hard on Budnick? It's not his operation. He's not profiting from it. Just like Tomasino isn't, which is why we let him go. Shouldn't we stick the police on the protection guy instead? He's the one who made Budnick do it." "The protection guy will go down too, I'm sure. But all he did was make Budnick let him use the outbuilding. It was Budnick who chose to threaten Tomasino's family. He took that step by himself. And that's a line he should not have crossed." Chapter 21. The GPS directed them back to the same side of town as the Waste Company depot. It took another 24 minutes, and brought them to another compound at the end of another long straight road with another line of fenced-in lots on either side. Only Norm's self-storage wasn't like the other units. It didn't have a regular fence. The whole exterior was designed to look like an old-time fort. It had wooden palisades, watchtowers, a line of cannons, a pole flying Old Glory, another with the volunteer state flag, and a third with some weird garish banner covered with images of muskets and sabers and shields. Maybe something of Norm's own design, Reacher thought. Maybe Norm was a history buff. Or maybe he thought the whole military vibe would give his place a sense of safety and security. Some kind of subliminal reassurance for his clients. Could be a valuable thing in his line of work. San stopped in front of the gate. There was a rustic wooden post next to the driveway, but no sign of an intercom or a keypad or a card reader. The only thing attached to it was a reproduction Pony Express mailbox. Sans glanced at the others, then rolled down her window and prodded it. The front swung open. Inside was a digital screen. It was blank. Sans touched it, and a grid of letters and numbers appeared. She took a deep breath and entered the code Budnick had given them. Nothing happened. "Am I cursed?" she said. "Or do all entry systems just hate me?" She tried the code again. Nothing happened. "Maybe they changed the system," Rutherford said. "Or Budnick bullshitted us," Reacher said. "Maybe he just misspoke," Sans said. "Let's check before we go jumping to conclusions." She reached for her purse, rummaged around inside for a moment, and pulled out Budnick's phone. He said the digits were the last seven of his cell number. "Let's get that from the horse's mouth." Sans touched the screen four times, and the phone came to life. "Wait a minute," Rutherford said. "How did you do that? Do you have some kind of FBI master code? I thought that was a myth." "Of course the Bureau has a code. They can get into any phone anytime. Remotely, too. Via satellites." "You didn't know? Really?" "Of course not. I was looking over Budnick's shoulder when he tried to call his protection guy. I saw what he keyed in. Now let's take a look. Here's his number." "Damn. It matches what he told us." "I bet they changed the system," Rutherford said. "I bet Budnick was bullshitting," Reacher said. "Hold on," Sans said. "The phone number is only part of it. Maybe he got the unit number wrong. He was under a lot of stress." "How can we check that?" Rutherford said. "We'll have to go back and ask him." "There's one other thing we could try," Reacher said. He pointed to a 24-hour helpline number posted above the screen. "Pass me Budnick's phone." Sans entered the digits, hit call, then speaker, then handed the phone to Reacher. A man answered after 7 rings. He said his name was Steve. He sounded sleepy.
Steve, this is Bill Budnick, Reacher said. Listen, this is a little embarrassing, but I'm at the gate of the storage place and I can't get it to open. I haven't been by for a while and I'm thinking maybe I'm misremembering my unit number. Could you confirm it for me?
Sorry, Mr. Budnick, can't do that. It's against the rules.
Oh, come on, help me out here. I'm not much of a numbers guy, and I'm too busy down at Fat Freddy's to come by very often, which is why it slipped my mind. I'm the owner there.
I know. Your picture was in the paper.
When I bought the place, right. Anyway, I tell you what. How about this? You confirm my unit number just this once, and I'll make a note. I'll write it down right now so this will never happen again. And then, anytime you want, you can come down to the diner and have anything on the menu on the house. What do you say?
I don't know. I shouldn't.
Okay. Dinner for two. Bring your significant other. Or come twice on your own. You won't regret it.
I shouldn't.
We have the best milkshakes in town, Steve. The best everything, if you ask me. I might be biased, but that doesn't mean I'm wrong.
I don't know. Can you at least tell me which block you're in?
Budnick had said A6. Hope for the best.
Sure. Block A. Okay, wait one.
Reacher heard the sound of papers rustling. Then Steve came back on the line.
Anything I want on the menu, right? And I can come twice?
You got it.
You're in A4, Mr. Budnick. Just don't let anyone know I told you.
Sands turned back to her window. She hit the A and the 4 on the screen. Then the last 7 digits of Budnick's phone number. Nothing happened. For a long moment. Then the gate swung open.
Once inside the fake stockade, they saw there was no further pretense of antiquity. Just 6 solid utilitarian structures. The smallest was the office, tucked immediately inside the gate. Its neon sign was switched off, and there were no lights showing inside. The other 5 buildings were set farther back, lined up side by side. They were finished with corrugated metal, painted battleship gray. Each was 40 feet wide, 100 feet long. The shorter sides faced the gate. Each one had a heavy-duty air conditioning unit sitting next to it, and each had a red letter stenciled on the end wall, high up in the angle of the roof. A was level with the office. E was all the way to the left. For a moment, the order bothered Reacher. He would have preferred A to E, not E to A. Then he figured they must have started out with 1 unit at the right-hand side of the lot to correspond with the access to the road, then worked their way left as they expanded. Reacher asked Sands to head for Budnick's unit first. He figured that the guy on the phone, Steve, might be monitoring the site from some remote position. It would be suspicious if they immediately turned the wrong way. And he wanted to get a sense of the security measures they were up against. He had been worried about guards being present, roving patrols, dogs, people brought in by the protection guy to keep an eye on his interests. It quickly became obvious that the site was unmanned. There were only 2 kinds of precautions in play. Locks and cameras. The locks varied from unit to unit, so Reacher figured it must be down to the individual clients to provide their own. The cameras were a different story. There was an identical one mounted at the corner of each block, 15 feet from the ground, where they couldn't be accidentally knocked or easily sabotaged. They were aimed along the front of the buildings, meaning that the door to every unit in the outer rows was covered by 2 separate cameras, and all the others by at least 2, possibly 4, depending on their field of focus. There were 10 units on each side of each building. The odd numbers were on the right, the even numbers on the left. The protection guy's unit was E4, so it was on the left, in an outer row, only covered by 2 cameras. Sands pulled away from Budnick's unit and drove to the near side of the E block. She turned and reversed parallel to the wall, staying as close to the building as she could. She continued until the back of the minivan was just under the outer camera. Reacher cut an 8-inch length of duct tape from the roll. He scrambled onto the roof of the van, took a step toward the rear. The paint was slippery. The van pitched and yawed on its suspension. Reacher braced himself with one hand against the wall, crept farther back, stretched up, and covered the lens with the tape. Sands looked around the perimeter of the site, and they repeated the procedure with the camera at the far end of the E-block. That meant they could have been recorded approaching Budnick's unit, and leaving it, and passing the odd-numbered A-units. Not ideal. Not disastrous. But more important, it meant that no one would be able to see them on the even side of the E-block. And if no one could see them, no one could report them. To the police. Or to anyone else. Sands made straight for the protection guy's unit. She reversed up to it and stayed in the van with the engine running. Reacher got out, carrying the bolt cutter. Rutherford joined him. They checked the number stenciled on both sides of the doorframe. Then Reacher closed the cutter's jaws around the stem of the lock. It was surprisingly slim. Reacher broke it open with barely any effort. He removed it, took hold of the handle low down at the center of the door, pulled it up, and saw furniture. A dining table, 8 matching dining chairs, a couch, 2 armchairs, a sideboard, a drinks cabinet, a bureau, and a floor lamp. Nothing electronic. Nothing that had been made in the last 50 years. Maybe 75. Reacher guessed that someone's relative had died. A parent or a grandparent. Leaving a house to be cleared. Everything else sold or given away or taken into service. The remnants too unfashionable to be used. But too valuable or too sentimental to be disposed of. So they were banished here. A practical solution for someone, but absolutely no help to them. Sands read their body language and climbed out to join them.
Budnick's an asshole,
Rutherford said. Reacher was right. He was lying. Not necessarily, Sands said. He got his own unit number wrong. Maybe he got this one wrong, too. We should start trying the others.
Is there time? Rutherford said. There are 100 units. Someone might come and see what we're doing. And what about the cameras? We can't disable all of them. Even with 2 down, we could have a problem. If someone's monitoring them, they're bound to investigate if they notice a whole row's gone dark.
We wouldn't have to check all the units, Reacher said. Budnick's story might be bullshit. But if it's not, and the protection guy does keep his contraband here, he will use one of the end rows. They're the only ones with units you can't see into from the opposite side. And it's more likely to be this one than the A block because it's farther from the entrance. Fewer people to see his trucks coming and going.
So 9 more to try, Sands said.
19, worst case. Maybe only 1 more, Reacher said. Budnick told us his unit was A6 and the protection guy's was E4. His was actually A4. So maybe he transposed the digits. Maybe the protection guy's is E6. Reacher moved 1 unit to the left. Its lock was also slender and unobtrusive, but it must have been made with some kind of specially hardened steel. Reacher had to put some serious effort into breaking it. He wrestled with the cutter for maybe 30 seconds before the stem finally gave way. Then he flipped the body aside, pulled it clear, dropped it into his pocket with the other 2 defeated locks, took hold of the door handle, and froze. A sound reached him. They were too far from the gate to have heard it open, but there was no mistaking the purr of a large motor, the thrum of tires on concrete. It was a vehicle, coming their way. Reacher nodded toward the minivan. Sands and Rutherford jumped inside. Reacher heaved the door to the furniture unit back into place and followed them. A pickup appeared from around the corner of the building. A Toyota. Some kind of metallic bronze color. Very shiny. No light bar on the roof. No security company logo. No wannabe gangsters with guns. Just the driver. He looked to be in his 50s. And he was in no hurry. He trundled by, gave a friendly wave, and continued toward the far end of the block. Stopped at the last but 1 door. E18. Climbed out, unlocked the unit, took a box from his load bed, and carried it inside. He was back in his truck within a minute. He waved again, then fired up the engine and continued around the far corner.
Come on, Sands said.
I have a bad feeling about this. Let's get it over with before anyone else shows up.
They climbed out together and Reacher hauled up the door to E6. Only it didn't open onto a space the size they'd seen before. This time, four units had been knocked together. Two on the even side, two on the odd side. Rutherford hit a switch on the wall, which caused a dozen fluorescent tubes to flicker into life. Holy Mother of God. Shelves had been installed throughout in rows about 2 yards apart. They held pretty much every kind of electronic gadget Reacher had ever heard of. Domestic, commercial, industrial, even some low-grade military. But whether the servers were part of the cache, he had no idea. I could live here for the rest of my life. Rutherford stepped inside and made his way slowly along the first shelf, scanning each item and muttering quietly to himself. Then something caught his eye a little farther ahead. He raced forward 6 feet, dropped to his knees, and threw his arms around a stack of black boxes on the lowest level.
I don't believe it. They're here. We found them.
Do they work? Reacher said. Have they been wiped? Can we test them?
Not here, Rutherford said. They're not like laptops. You can't just turn them on and see. You have to connect them to a network. Then you can use a computer to check what's on them. Think of them like giant external hard drives.
We'll show you how later, Sans said. Networking them's easy. Right now, we need to get them in the van. Take them somewhere safe. Work on them there. Rutherford and Sans carried 2 servers each. Reacher carried 4. They loaded them into the narrow cargo area behind the rear bench seat. Sans took another minute to make sure they were secure. Then she made for the driver's seat. Hold on, Reacher said. If you want to copy what's on a server, what do you need? Another server? Rutherford nodded. And a network and some software. But basically, yes. Are there any other servers here that would be the right kind?
Sure. There's a whole bunch.
You used 8 servers altogether, but only 1 from the archive project.
Correct. The rest I scrounged from other places.
Okay. Let's grab a couple we could copy onto. No. Let's make it 4.
Why?
What are we going to copy? Maybe nothing. I'll explain once we're out of here. Chapter 22. There were 5 words on Reacher's mind as they headed back to town. Need to know. And 40 hours. 5 words, rather than 6, because 8 hours were gone. But the same 2 concepts remained, along with a single question, which begged a 1-word answer. Had the servers been wiped? Yes or no? Either way, Reacher would have 2 things to do. If the data was intact, he would have to persuade Rutherford to duplicate it and get a copy to the FBI. If the data was gone, he would have to break the news to Agent Fisher and persuade Rutherford to leave town. He knew which was preferable, but he had no idea which would be easier. Reacher looked at Sans and Rutherford in the front seats. They were different people than the ones who had entered the storage unit. Their fatigue was gone, and their worry. He could feel their excitement now, their enthusiasm, their certainty that with the servers successfully recovered, everything else was bound to fall into place. Reacher himself was feeling less confident. He was the only one who knew what was at stake, and he was the only one who had no experience with computers. He had no idea how to extract their secrets, or how to find out if they even held any secrets. He would rather be dealing with humans any day of the week. Their first port of call was the apartment building so that Rutherford and Sans could collect some clothes and toiletries and grab their laptops and all the cables and connectors they would need to hook the servers together. Next, they collected Marty's car, which Reacher drove. Then they headed north again, in tandem, back to the truck stop. Not for fuel or supplies this time, but because of its 2 motels. One in particular had caught Reacher's eye. He figured it was the oldest part of the whole complex. The design was very traditional. He had seen similar places all across the country. It had a blue and red neon sign out front depicting some kind of mythical bird. The building was a single story high. It was clad with strips of dark wood. It started at its southwest corner with an office, which had a covered entryway and machines outside for soft drinks and ice. Then it continued around three sides of a square with a regular pattern of window and door, window and door. 36 pairs altogether, each with a parking space outside, leaving no distance to walk from your vehicle to your room, making it easy to carry your luggage inside, and reducing the chances of anyone seeing what you had brought, however unusual it might be, or incongruous. Such as three mismatched suitcases and a dozen sleek black boxes. The layout suited Reacher very well, as did the fact that of the 36 parking spaces, only four were occupied. Three were taken by ancient sedans, their paint bleached and blistered by years of sun. The other by a bright yellow Toyota SUV with red mud sprayed right up to its roof. Two of the sedans were on the office side of the courtyard. The third sedan and the Toyota were on the opposite side, leaving one section completely vacant. Sands pulled up next to the vending machines, climbed out, and headed into the office. Reacher parked next to the minivan and went inside with her. The space was long and narrow. The reception counter was immediately to the right, followed by a tall freezer with double glass doors and a table with a microwave and a drip coffee machine. Three white plastic tables were lined up along the left-hand wall. Each had four white plastic chairs and a vase with a red plastic flower. Reacher rapped on the counter, and after a moment a door opened and a guy came through. He looked about 19. His hair was shoulder length. He had round glasses, and he was wearing a baggy white t-shirt and a pair of faded baggy jeans. He plunked himself down in the receptionist's chair and peered at Reacher. "We need to talk about the price of your rooms," Reacher said. The guy pointed to a sign on the wall behind him. "Rooms $95 plus per night." "Those are your standard rates, I guess," Reacher said. "I'm not interested in those." "No discounts," the guy said. "95 plus tax. Take it or leave it." "I'm not looking for a discount. I need something else. A special arrangement." "No special arrangements either, whatever they are." "Don't be hasty. You haven't heard what I have in mind. Do you want to miss out on a good thing?" The guy paused. "Go on." "Two rooms," Reacher said, "a week in advance. One at $95 a night, on a credit card as normal. The other at $150 a night, in cash, directly into your pocket." "Go on," the guy said. "Three conditions. First, the rooms must be together in the center of the vacant block, facing out across the courtyard, and they must have a connecting door." "Can do." "Second, we register for one of the rooms as normal. The other, you enter in your system as not available for occupancy." "I don't know what that is. I don't think we have it here." "Sure you do. All hotels have it. Or some version of it. For when a customer dies and you have to wait for the coroner to sign off. Or someone gets busted for drugs and you have to wait for the police to clear the scene. Or even if the plumbing breaks down and you have to wait to get it fixed. Look in your employee handbook. It'll be there." "Handbook? What century are you from?" The guy woke his computer and called up a help screen. "Oh, okay. We do have it. No problem. What else?" "This arrangement is completely confidential. You don't mention it to anyone. Not your boss, not your coworkers, not the people who clean the rooms, not your friends, not your mom or dad, not even your cat or dog." "I don't have a cat or a dog, but I get your point. Can do. And just to clarify, you said a week for both rooms? As in 7 nights?" "7 nights. $1,050, if that's what you're thinking about." "All right, then. We have a deal." "Outstanding. My friend here will take care of the credit card and the forms. I'll take care of the cash. Half now, half when we leave. Assuming you've kept your mouth shut." Reacher and Sands walked out of the office with the keys to rooms 18 and 19. 18 was above board. 19 was off the books, invisible to anyone who might come looking for them. Reacher parked Marty's car outside room 18. Sands reversed the minivan close to the door to room 19. They carried the servers inside, then the suitcases, then the bolt cutter and the duct tape and the remains of the other supplies Reacher had bought. 4 minutes exposure. An acceptable risk. Then Reacher took the minivan and dumped it way on the far side of the site. Sands would be able to return it to the rental office at the airport once everything was resolved. But for the time being, it was too hot to use. Tomasino had seen it. Budnick had seen it. The random customer at Norm's self-storage had seen it. And it had most likely been recorded by half a dozen of Norm's security cameras. Reacher picked up 3 pizzas and 3 Cokes at the first restaurant he passed and took them back to the motel. He let himself into room 18 and switched on the light. It was the kind of place that was probably considered luxurious at one time. Now most people would call it adequate or economical. There was a pair of queen beds with flowery covers and a scattering of cushions, an armchair, a TV, a fridge, a desk, a bathroom, and a closet. The floors were fake wood. The walls were painted in pale neutral tones. Finishes selected for durability rather than comfort, Reacher figured. Even the wattage of the light bulb was designed to save on the electric bills rather than to provide a cozy atmosphere. But none of that bothered him. There was a bed, a place to wash, and access to coffee. Reacher opened his half of the connecting door and knocked. Sands opened the other side, and he stepped through to room 19. It was a mirror image of 18. Identical, except for the modifications Sands and Rutherford had made. They'd taken the comforter from one of the beds and taped it over the window to prevent any light from spilling out. They'd taped all around the doorframe for the same reason. They'd set up one of the 8 original servers on every flat surface they could find. And they'd created a rat's nest of power cables and thick yellow wires to connect everything together. Except for Rutherford's laptop. It was on the edge of the stripped bed, tethered to the other equipment with a thick blue wire. Rutherford was sitting in front of it, cross-legged, concentrating so hard on the screen he didn't notice that Reacher had returned. How's it looking? Reacher handed a pizza and a drink to Sands, and dropped another on the bed next to Rutherford. Good, I think, Sands said. Rusty? What's that? Rutherford said. Oh, thanks. How is it looking, Reacher said, with the servers, the data? Is it still there?
Oh, yes, seems to be. Cerberus is pretty messed up, though. Looks like the ransomware tried to rewrite parts of it. Might take a while to figure out what and how, and why, and how to build some protection into our final product. But I've got to say, this is better than I dared hope for. End of the day, Cerberus got bent, but it didn't get broken. And that's a result in my book.
That's good, Reacher said. But the records from the archive project, are they still there? All of them?
The disk is full. Nothing seems corrupted. So I guess so.
Can you find out for sure?
I could, but then do it now. Please. But I need to figure out how Cerberus...
Rusty, this is important. Check now. Please.
Rutherford sighed, then spent a couple of minutes tapping on his keyboard and prodding at his touchpad. Okay, look. I haven't opened every one of the thousands and thousands of scanned images, basically photographs of documents, but to the best of my belief, the archive records are all intact and undamaged.
In that case, I need you to make a copy, Reacher said. No, 2 copies.
No way. Forget it. I already told you, I'm not letting anyone have a copy of anything. Not until Cerberus is perfected. My future depends on it. Sarah's too.
I understand. But here's the thing. When I got back to Mitch's apartment this morning, I told you the truth about what happened to me. But I didn't tell you the whole truth.
Chapter 23.
What do you guys know about a thing called the Sentinel? Reacher said.
Zip, Rutherford said. Never heard of it. I've heard a little about it, Sans said. Mostly gossip, from some people at the Bureau. Word is, about 4 years ago, there was a major brain drain out of cybercrimes. A bunch of the top guns all upped and left out of the blue. At first, people thought one of the big Silicon Valley corporations was on a recruitment rampage. Then there was a theory that some startup was throwing crazy money around. But finally, someone found out the government was behind it. An emergency response to the Russians having a new weapon that could totally shred our election systems. Everywhere in the country was vulnerable. No results could be trusted. The guys at Quantico did some modeling. They figured the fallout from even one compromised general election could be anything from civil disobedience to full-scale rioting to possible insurrection. Imagine some of these foil-hat militia guys if they had evidence someone stole an election. Some of them have serious firepower and are already a hair's breadth from using it.
You're about on the money, Reacher said. The Sentinel is the only thing that can stop this weapon. The Russians can't defeat it, so they're trying to steal it.
How? Rutherford said.
They have a spy inside Oak Ridge Laboratory, where the Sentinel was designed.
Why don't they arrest him?
Because they only know a spy exists. They don't know who it is. The Bureau thinks it's a sleeper, with some kind of connection to this area, which is where things start cutting close to the bone. A document surfaced in the town archive that could have revealed the spy's ID. The archive burned down. Not a coincidence. The online archive had the same documents. It got locked by the ransomware attack. Also, not a coincidence.
And my server has some of those documents on it. Because Cerberus protected them.
Which is why you almost got kidnapped. The Russians want those records, to destroy whichever one could incriminate their guy.
How do you know all this, Reacher? Sans said.
You thought the rendezvous at the old factory was a setup.
It was.
Only not in the way you expected. The woman who showed up? She's an FBI agent. Undercover. She's infiltrated the Russian cell that's tasked with recovering the server. She has two jobs. To get a copy of it for the Bureau so they can ID the spy. And to protect Rusty. She lured me there to ask for our help.
And you're only telling us now?
Reacher shrugged. There was no point telling you before we had the server. What if it had been destroyed? I'd have revealed the agent's existence for nothing. And the fewer people who know about her, the better.
Fair, I guess, Sans said.
One other thing, Reacher said. Full disclosure. Because I messed up their attempt to grab Rusty on Monday. The Russians are bringing in a new guy. From Moscow. To try again. So the bottom line is this. If we want to avoid all the bad things that would follow a compromised election, and if we want to stop this new Russian going after Rusty, we have one option. Give a copy of the server to the Bureau. Rutherford jumped off the bed and picked up a pair of the extra servers they had brought from the protection guys unit at Norm's.
Sarah, what are you waiting for?
Help me. We need two more power outlets over here.
It took Rutherford 10 minutes to get the extra servers fixed up the way he wanted them. Reacher used the time to call a number Agent Fisher had given him for wall work in case of emergencies or breakthroughs. He figured this qualified. Wallwork answered on the first ring, and Reacher cut straight to the chase. The server had been found. The data was intact. Wallwork was all business in return. No thanks, no congratulations. Just a pair of rapid-fire questions. Where are you, and how soon can we meet? Reacher told Wallwork to be in the vicinity of the truck stop in 1 hour, and that he would call back shortly with a precise location. Reacher excused himself and hurried to the office. He rapped on the counter. The long-haired kid appeared. This time he looked surprised and worried. He no doubt had visions of the balance of his 1,000 in cash evaporating before it ever saw the inside of his pocket.
"Let's talk about your room rates again,"
Reacher said. "Your standard is $95 a day, which works out to about $4 an hour. So if I wanted another room for 2 hours, no questions asked, no records kept,
How much would that cost me?
$50, cash, up front.
What's your name, son?
Carmichael.
Well, Carmichael, I believe in the illustrative power of stories. Do you?
I guess.
Take The Man Who Killed the Golden Goose as an example. Have you heard that story?
$40.
I can't go any lower. I'll have to split the dough with the housekeeper, remember?
That won't be necessary. I won't make any mess. I won't even sit on the bed.
What do you even want the room for, then?
Reacher said nothing.
$30, Carmichael offered.
Reacher said nothing.
$20. That's better.
Reacher took 2 tens out of his pocket. Pass me a key. And make sure it's in the same section as the other two. Near them, but not adjacent.
Reacher stepped outside and called Walwork back. He gave him the motel's name and address and specified room 14 for their meeting. Then he returned to room 18. Sands was sitting in the armchair. Reacher smiled at her and lay down on one of the beds.
Your pizza will be cold, Sands said after a few moments of silence.
Want me to go to the office, heat it up for you?
No, thanks, Reacher said. Cold pizza doesn't bother me.
Unless you want to heat yours.
Cold pizza doesn't bother me either. And anyway, I'm full. I ate while you were gone.
Reacher took a bite. Sans smiled.
Cold pizza, she said. Cheap motel. It's like I'm back at the bureau.
Do you miss it?
I don't miss the backache from all the crappy mattresses I had to sleep on when I was on the road, that's for sure.
But hearing you talk about the agent you met, what she's doing,
protecting our elections, stopping the Russians' sabotage, things like that, they make you think.
Did you work undercover much?
No. A few sting ops when they needed someone who could talk the talk. Other than that, I was too specialized.
Spent most of my time getting loaned out to different field offices, wherever they had a cybercrime problem.
Same shit, different desk, staring at a screen.
Is that why you left?
No, it wasn't the work. I actually enjoyed that. But as the years rolled by, I came to realize, as much as I liked it there, the FBI was never going to give me what I want in life.
Which is what? Your own corporation?
She shook her head. No, that's just a means to an end. A way to generate more cash. Which is why Cerberus is so important. If it pays off big enough, I'll be one and done. See you and goodbye.
What do you need the cash for?
I can't tell you. You'll laugh at me.
Try me.
Sands closed her eyes and took a deep breath.
I want to have enough in the bank that I can quit working, sell my home, and most of my stuff, and buy a houseboat.
She opened her eyes.